Blog Talk Radio. Betrayal Trauma Radio. Help for partners after sexual betrayal. Your source for healing. Your host, Carol Jurgensen-Chief, a.k.a. Carol the Coach, is here to help you navigate through the crisis of finding out that your partner is a sex addict. She is APSATS trained, so she knows that you're likely facing the greatest trauma of your life. Carol the Coach is here to help you find safety in an unsafe situation. Now, here is your host, Carol the Coach.
Well, welcome to everybody who's listening to our second show on partner betrayal. One thing I absolutely know is that you didn't ask for this, and it is very hard to know how to navigate through and figure out what is in your best interest. And that's what this show is all about. I am so excited that we are going to be interviewing Ann Blythe, who is the CEO of BTR, Betrayal Trauma Recovery. You know, she's going to be talking about your experience being married to a partner. She knows. She's been one. She also knows that sometimes you, with a person that you love, and you end up feeling crazy. You wonder, did I hear that? Did he just put the blame on me? Did he just change what he was talking about? And clearly, that can be so deceiving. It's called gaslighting, and she's going to be talking about gaslighting. She's going to be talking about, is pornography abusive? No matter what the addict in your life suffers from, we can almost invariably tell you that the gateway drug was pornography. I've never met an addict in my history and that didn't use pornography initially to light up his brain. And what we do know about sexual addiction is that it is, absolutely is, a brain disorder. It's brain dysfunction at its worst. And so pornography oftentimes presents as something that all men do, when in reality, it's my belief that pornography objectifies women, and that is never a healthy choice. In addition to it not being a healthy choice, for some men, it lights up the brain in a way that produces dopamine that then creates cravings and urges for more dopamine and sets the cycle of sexual addiction. And when that occurs, when a man begins to crave pornography, it doesn't stop there. It will invariably get worse. If he has that addictive enzyme in his brain, if he has whatever genetic mutations have occurred to be predisposed to an addiction, well, then we're in big trouble, because he will go from pornography perhaps to chatting online, to looking for escorts, to going to adult websites, to perhaps even other forms of sexual addiction like voyeurism or exhibitionism. You see, if you have an addiction, part of the plight, the addiction, is that it always gets worse. The real struggle for a sex addict is that they want to know what else is out there that they haven't seen, felt, or experienced. And so they don't just stop with 20 minutes of pornography. And that's why we're going to be talking today about, is it abusive? And we've got some real experts who know that. And, you know I'm all about educating. I have a show on sex addiction and partner betrayal called blogtalkradio.com/sexhelpwithcarolthecoach. Well, Anne has a radio podcast available, and she's going to be talking about how you can access that. We want you to have everything out there to help you make reasonable and responsible decisions for yourself, for your family, and for mental health. That's why this is sponsored by APSATS. APSATS is an amazing organization that trains clinicians and coaches. And they train coaches and clinicians to be partner sensitive. They know that your reaction to what you've discovered and been dealing with more oftentimes than not causes incredible stress and trauma. And when there's been a deception like this, it makes you question everything else in your life. And so if you're looking for a sensitive partner trained specialist, go to APSATS, that's APSATS.org. Put in your country, put in your city, put in your zip code, and pull up who's available to you. And, you know, if you feel like you need therapy, look for a clinician. Like resources and support and somebody who more than likely has been through this experience, a coach would be the best bet. Now, I happen to be both. And I'll tell you, the beautiful thing about coaches is that we can coach anywhere in the world. Through Zoom, which is HIPAA compliant, or through phone coaching. And there is nothing better when you are 400 miles away from the nearest professional who would understand where you're coming from, to be able to know that you too can be seen by somebody who understands your plight, who understands your fight, and who understands what you need to get healthy, to work through this trauma, and to be a stronger person for it. Now, you may be wondering about this show. Somebody may have talked to you about it. Maybe it was your clinician or coach. Since we're brand new, that would not surprise me in the least. I just found out from one of our coaches at APSATS that we are now available through iTunes. So if you want Gribe for free and get every show, you go to iTunes and you put in Betrayal Trauma Radio. Or you can put in my name, Carol the Coach, or Carol Jurgensen Sheets, and it will pull up all free internet radio shows that I've done in my history. You'll get a radio show that says Your Best Life, and that is my coaching radio show that I had for about 2 years, and it just really helps people to take their life to the next level and work through depression and anxiety and set goals and deal with conflict. I say it's for the everyday person. We can all benefit from a show like that. And then, as I indicated earlier, there's Sex Help with Carol the Coach, and that was specifically geared towards addicts initially. But I quickly started making it partner sensitive because a lot of my listeners were partners who either wanted to understand their husband or wanted to understand what resources were available out there for them. And now I'm super excited to be doing this show because it is exclusively for partners of sexual addiction. And I would never have thought to put this together if it hadn't been for my APSATS training. I so believe in them. So go to iTunes, get any or all of those shows, and, share it with others. Because what we know is that when you find something that you believe is helpful, It always makes a difference to pass it on in the world. Now, I was talking with a partner earlier this week, and she actually had gone through a disclosure with her husband, and he failed the polygraph. You'll find out, because we're going to be doing some future shows on disclosures and polygraphs and who are good polygraphers to go to, that you want to get a skilled polygrapher who understands sexual addiction, and you want to get somebody who's partner sensitive, who's going to explain the process to you, answer all your questions, and then do the test. So she went in with her husband after a disclosure, and he had actually a 26-page disclosure, and he read it to her, and she asked him additional questions, and she got what she was hoping for. She got all of her questions answered, and it's followed up by a polygraph test, because the partner needs to know that she can trust that he has shared everything. So they showed up at the polygrapher several days ago, and he failed the test. He failed the one question that surmised everything that he had talked about, and that was, were you absolutely honest with Carol, your wife, and with the polygrapher regarding the disclosure and this test? And he flunked it. And so now she and I are brainstorming, what is our next step? Because she deserves honesty. She deserves to find some truth in a very unsafe situation. And she doesn't particularly want to leave him. She has a family. She's got youngins. I mean, she wants to maintain the lifestyle that she's had, and she doesn't want to disturb the children. But she also doesn't want to trust somebody who has not been honest with her. So we're going to come up with boundaries. And most of you know that boundaries are those things that keep you safe in an unsafe situation. That may be that she'll ask him to move out. Or if she doesn't want to disturb the kid's lifestyle, she may ask him to sleep in a different bedroom or down in the basement or upstairs in the loft. She may require another polygraph in a month that says, have you been honest about your events since the last polygraph test? And that'll help to determine, is he continuing to lie, or could he not bring himself, despite the 20-some pages that he did for her, couldn't be 100% honest about his old behaviors? So that's the beauty of working with somebody who gets partner trauma and understands sexual addiction. You always have options. Don't ever feel like you don't have choices. Sometimes you need two or three brains working for you and with you. That's why I share some cases. You know, even though I'm a coach, I'm more oftentimes than not act as the clinician, and we'll hire a coach. They're much more affordable, and we can have three heads working on the same issue to figure out what is in your best interest. And that's what this is all about. You're not alone. It may feel like you're alone. You may be afraid to talk to certain people. I don't blame you. This is one of those situations that you really want to evaluate who are safe people to share your story with, and what are the ramifications or consequences of that. Because there is no doubt about it, if you are working diligently on figuring out what to do to stay safe and provide yourself self-care, you may need another person helping you with that. And that's what this show, my guests, and the resources we're going to give you is all about. Now, again, I'm very excited to have Betrayal Trauma Recovery on because they saw a need early on when they were putting together resources. They saw this need to provide more resources for partners. And they're, I think, the first internet radio show. Is that right, Anne?
To my knowledge, yeah, I think so.
Tell us a little bit about your incredible organization and what you want to talk today about.
So Betrayal Trauma Recovery is a free podcast. We're available on iTunes and Google Play and anywhere that you find podcasts. And we're also an online community for women who are married to sex addicts and experiencing the abusive behaviors that are related with sex addiction. When I created Betrayal Trauma Recovery, I decided to make it women only. Not that men aren't partners of sex addicts, but at least for us and our community, we wanted to make it extremely safe for women who have been victims of abuse and infidelity. And so we have daily online groups. Right now we have two on Monday and two on Tuesday, and we keep adding groups as more women join. We have four core coaches, Coach Sarah, Coach Kat, Coach Galen, and Coach Laura, and all of them are APSATS certified. We're working towards certification. I'm also APSATS trained. And they work together to provide this amazing daily group that is facilitated by professional APSATS coaches. And they're really great at recognizing women's needs, coaching them through the situation that they're in, helping them know what they need next, and validating what they're going through. And I'm very, very proud of the services we provide in terms of the daily online groups and also individual sessions.
Well, and I know that one of the unique things about your organization, Betrayal Trauma Recovery, is that clearly you knew that women sometimes at 11 or 2 a.m. in the morning want to talk to somebody. And so you have some coaches that live in other parts of the world where that is their 11 or 12 o'clock in the afternoon or morning. And so people can get their needs met when they're in crisis, which so oftentimes that's a tough resource for partners as we speak.
Yeah, we have clients in the UK and in Australia. We've had a client from Dubai and one from South Korea. So as long as you can speak English, you are welcome from anywhere all over the world. Coach Kat actually lives in the UK, and so she's available during that nighttime time if you live in the United States or if your schedule, you know, so your schedule, anybody's schedule all over the world works at Betrayal Trauma Recovery. We also have a free peer-to-peer Facebook group. It has over 1,200 women in it, and it's moderated by a woman who was just recently APSATS trained and eight other volunteer moderators. So it's a very safe place. We have rules for what you can share and the types of feedback that you can give women so that you can experience that safety. And that, if you would like to join our free Facebook group, go to btr.org, which is our website, and join our newsletter. And in the first two emails you receive, there's instructions about how to get in that free Facebook group. And that's really cool because at 3 o'clock in the morning, I've noticed frequently women in that group say, "Hey, is anybody awake? I can't sleep. This just happened." And even though it's not a professional that will give you feedback, there's another woman somewhere in the world who is usually awake who can say, "Hey, I'm here. What's going on?" You know, and just be there with you and sit with you. That's actually one of the rules of the group is that you don't give advice, but that you listen with empathy and then share your own experience. So something like, "Yeah, wow, I'm so sorry you're going through this. This happened to me. This is what I did that worked, or I just tried this and it failed. So I have a lot of empathy for you." You know, that type, those are the types of discussions that happen inside of our free Facebook group.
Yeah, that is amazing. And one more time, how can they access that group?
You go to our website, btr.org, and join our newsletter. So you just put your email into our newsletter, and the first two emails that you receive, so you'll receive the first email and it will have instructions, and then the second one will also have instructions at the bottom of how to join that group. I want to emphasize that this is a secret group, so you can't, like, your friends and family can't see it publicly. They won't know that you're part of the group. Anytime you post inside of the group, nobody will know except for the people inside the group. So just that their privacy issues are taken care of through the secret group situation. So you can't find it on Facebook. Like, if you tried to search for it on Facebook, you would not be able to find it. So the only way that you can join it is through our newsletter.
Well, I tell you what, I know that your coaches are so skilled. They're all APSATS trained. And, you know, you have made it the mission to help women dealing with the abusive nature of sex addiction. And so I wanted to talk to you a little bit about abuse and sex addiction, because one of the things that I know you and I were talking about is when women are in relationship with active porn users, there's all sorts of beliefs of, are they in an abusive relationship or not? And I'd love to know what your take on that is.
Yeah, I think the first abusive behavior that we can observe in a relationship with porn use is consent. So, for example, if you're not able to give your full consent to be in a relationship because you don't have information that you need, then basically you're being exploited by the person that you're in the relationship with. So if you're in a relationship with someone who is using porn, let's say 3 times a week, and let's say he masturbates 4 times a week, but you don't know. Okay. And this is important to you. So, for example, we have a large population of religious women who listen to our podcast. And for them, they don't want pornography in their relationship. There's an expectation that there's no pornography. And there's also an expectation that there's no masturbation, that there is fidelity there, both sexually and emotionally. And so that's their expectation. And so because there is no consent there, because their husband is not saying, okay, just so you know, I masturbate 6 times a week and I view porn 4 times a week. Would you still like to be in a relationship with me? Or would you still like to marry me? Or would you still like to have sex? You know, there's not that level of consent. And that's when the behaviors escalate, like what you were talking about with prostitutes or you know, other types of sexual addiction behaviors, they're also not getting their partner's consent. So the consent issue is the number one abusive issue that we see in, generally speaking, all relationships that involve porn use, especially where the woman does not want porn use in her relationship.
Well, that makes total sense. And so, yes, that is abuse when you don't have information. And when there's a secret that's kept from you.
Yeah, yeah, now, they're keeping it from you on purpose, right? It's not an accidental thing. It's not like, oh, yeah, I'm so sorry, I forgot to tell you I stopped by at McDonald's on the way home or something. You know, this is an ongoing behavior that's happening continually that they are purposefully keeping from their spouse.
Well, because they know it would be upsetting, and sometimes it would explain other things like the distance in a relationship when a sex addict is masturbating and looking at porn and is no longer turned on by his wife because he's trained his brain to want a certain type of sex. Or, you know, if they're masturbating a lot, they may have a refractory period that takes 2 or 3 days to get back. And so when they're frequently using porn and masturbation, they aren't able to have sex.
Yeah. Yeah. So that abusive situation grows into more, I would say, overt abuse. So that type of abuse is like abuse by omission, right? They're not telling them information that they need to receive their wife's full consent. But that grows into gaslighting. So let's pretend like the wife starts suspecting something, right? She starts feeling like something is not quite right. So she might say something like, you know, I just feel like something's not quite right in our relationship. There's something going on with you. And then the lie will grow bigger at this point, and that makes the abuse worse, because at this point he might say something like, you know, no, everything's fine. Everything is okay, which makes her feel crazy, right? And so she starts thinking, wait, am I crazy? So this starts a form of psychological abuse, which is called gaslighting. And many women who are, their husbands are having affairs, they're experiencing this type of gaslighting. And they're starting to feel like, I'm going crazy. Something's wrong with me. And when that starts, that's when the psychological abuse starts to escalate. And women with gaslighting going on, they feel high amounts of trauma. I think the interesting thing is also sometimes they don't realize the trauma in their life. So they might even think, oh, yeah, my husband says everything's okay. Our marriage is pretty good. There's something there. I'm not sure what it is, but maybe they'll make excuses for it. Like, oh, he's stressed at work, or oh, we're just waiting to buy our new house, or, you know, whatever it is. They kind of work around it, not realizing the abuse and the trauma that is happening.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. And, you know, oftentimes I feel like gaslighting can take on several different looks. Sometimes gaslighting is when he purposefully makes her feel crazy to get her off the track of what he's doing and who he is. And then sometimes gaslighting is just denying something over and over and over again and making the person feel bad for her own intuition. She ends up feeling crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, that happens so much with our clients. We have clients who also, the psychological abuse can even get worse if they find a therapist, for example, who is not APSATS trained, who doesn't really know to look for these behaviors. Then the wife can get, or the partner can get further abused or traumatized by a clergy or therapists who listen to the husband's quote unquote side of the story, which is really just a lie about the situation. And then the trauma can even escalate from there. So we have so many clients that come to Betrayal Trauma Recovery who have been to, you know, 7-8 therapists, and their trauma by the time they get to us is just so intense, especially from those abusive behaviors that are happening around the denial and also the blame that they're receiving for the situation.
Yeah, and give our listening audience just an example of how a partner might be blamed in a relationship.
So I'll give you an example from my life. When I came out and told my clergy the abuse that I was experiencing, I finally started to recognize that it was abuse after 7 years of marriage. My now ex-husband said to the clergy, well, she is so controlling, and she's actually emotionally abusive, and she does this and that, and she just drives me crazy, which is why I have punched walls and why I have screamed and yelled in her face. And then he actually was arrested for domestic violence. And even then he told our clergy and his family that the reason why he attacked me physically was because of what I did. Like, I attacked him, which wasn't true. So all the stories around it lied, but they all believed his story, and I got labeled abusive in the process. And that is, there's a term for that. It's called DARVO. It's where you deny what you've done, then you attack your victim, and then you reverse the victim and offender role. So you claim that you're actually the victim. So there are about probably 20 people in the world. My old clergy member, I don't go to that clergy person anymore, and my ex-husband's family, who truly in their heart think that I am the abuser, even though I have all this proof and all of that, you know, we've got holes in walls, we've got police records, we've got a medical report. But this happens with so many of the women. And the problem with pornography addiction is that unlike a hole in the wall, right, or a broken hand or a bruise, you can't see it. And so I even was thinking, am I going crazy? Did this really happen? Am I really the abuser? I'm so confused. Like, I went through this whole process of that, which is why I started Betrayal Trauma Recovery, because I have a master's degree. I thought, how can I not understand this? I thought I understood it, and it was still so confusing. The reason why it's confusing is because we're being abused, right? But with pornography, there's not the bruise. There's not a hole in the wall. There's not spitting and yelling in your face necessarily, although a lot of women do experience that. But it makes it even that much harder to come to grips with really what's happening. And it makes it that much easier for the abuser to get away with it because there's not obvious evidence.
Absolutely. Again, making most abused women wonder if they're really being abused.
Yeah. I think that this age old question that so many people ask who have not been in an abusive situation, they ask, well, why don't abused women leave, right? It's a very common question. People can't understand it. And the main answer is because they don't know that they're being abused. Once they know, then it's a whole process to figure out how to get out of it. But coming to understand that you're actually being abused is a process in and of itself. It can take years. I was abused for 7 years. And I was facing it head on, trying to figure out what was going on. And instead of thinking I'm being abused, I was thinking, oh, my husband, he was abused as a child, so let's get him to the best therapist. And, oh, maybe he has bipolar disorder, so let's get him some medication. And many abusers, they don't abuse people on purpose. I think that's another misconception about abuse. Is that you think, well, okay, well, it's his pornography addiction and he's got this pornography addiction. And so that's why these abusive behaviors are coming out. And that might be the reason, but it doesn't mean that we need to be abused through the recovery process. So let's say he says, okay, I'm going to recover from my pornography addiction. And he gets into treatment and he starts making his way to recovery. That is the best case scenario for everyone, right? We want to keep these relationships intact, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you need to be abused through the process. So for the wife, for the person married to the porn user, they need to get to safety ASAP as soon as possible and observe their spouse's recovery from a safe distance. To see, okay, how's their recovery going? Good. So that they can remain safe through that process. Because many women are, I'm going to say, quote unquote, being supportive of their spouse's recovery. Meanwhile, being abused almost on a daily basis through gaslighting, lying, blaming, blame shifting, you know, all of the abusive tactics that they use, not realizing that what they view as supporting their spouse's recovery is actually just keeping them in the abuse cycle.
Well, and let's talk about this for a minute, because I love Barbara Steffens' quote. She's the president of APSATS, and she says, they're trying to find safety in an unsafe situation. What would you say BTR might advise women to do to seek safety?
So safety is our number one priority at Betrayal Trauma Recovery. We do not encourage divorce. Through my own personal situation, I did not want to get divorced. I wanted to keep my family together. So when we are able to put safety as the top priority, it gives our clients so many options that they would not have otherwise. For example, if you go to a therapist or maybe even your local domestic violence shelter, usually, like, at least in my experience, they just say, well, you just need to get divorced, right? And if you don't want to get divorced, you get this really strange look. Like, they give you a look like, well, don't be crazy. And we don't do that at Betrayal Trauma Recovery. So if you can put safety as the top priority, then it opens up a world of options to you, and it opens up a world of options to our clients that enable them to work within the values that they have while making their way to a peaceful family. So the first thing that we help clients do is identify what the abusive behaviors are. And that takes time. So when we say make your way to safety, it really is a path and it really is a journey. It's not like you could do one or two sessions and have it all figured out. It's something that you need a group support, which is why we provide group support on a daily basis, and also individual support. So once you know exactly the types of abusive behaviors that you're dealing with, and like I said, that takes time, then the second thing is figuring out boundaries that work for you and that are within your value system. So many women who do not want to get divorced, but they want to keep their families together, they might think, okay, well, I feel unsafe when I am lied to, and I know I'm being lied to right now, and so I'm going to ask him to sleep on the couch, or I'm going to ask him to do this, or I'm going to do this, I'm going to sleep on the couch. Many women in this situation get boundaries mixed up. They think that I hear a lot of women say, okay, these are my boundaries. He has to go to group every week. He has to sleep on the couch. He has to pray every day, and he has to check in with me every day. And that's actually not a boundary. Those are requests. Your boundaries would be, I'm going to request that he sleep on the couch. And if he chooses not to, then my boundary would be that I will sleep on the couch. A boundary has to be something that you can do on your own independently of what he chooses to do. So boundary work is actually extremely complex. It's individual. And in order to do it well, you need group support and individual support. Our coach, Coach Sarah, is an expert at boundaries and helps women walk through their specific situations, what the specific behaviors they are that they're experiencing are, and then what boundaries they need to help them feel safe within their value system. And so, you know, we could talk, I guess, about specific situations, but in general, it's so individualized. That's really important, which is why I love APSATS, because APSATS really emphasizes the individual need. Like there are a lot of programs for sex addicts or recovery from sex addiction that is like a video module, for example, and you watch it and then you're supposed to be like, oh, I know what to do. I don't think that that works in this situation. We have not seen women recover well from just watching, you know, videos. They might learn something or they might have an aha moment, but to actually learn how to apply the principles in their lives and actually learn how to use boundaries in order to actually create safety, I think the application needs individual one-on-one, like in person. And when I say in person, it can be online, but just you're actually talking to a real person. You could be talking to them on the phone or over the computer, but that is how you can decide what you need to do specifically to get the safety that you need. So we start there with the APSATS multidimensional partner trauma model, starting with the safety and stabilization. What behaviors are you looking at? What boundaries do you need to set? And what support do you need around that to make sure that you can actually pull that off?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. And again, her name is Sarah Morellis, and people are able to work with her by going to your website, btr.org, and then looking for her and scheduling with her, correct?
Yeah. She has two groups of individual sessions that women do frequently that are detecting and confronting gaslighting, and then setting and holding healthy boundaries. And she's also one of the coaches that is in Betrayal Trauma Recovery Group, the daily group that we have. So she does cover that like in little bits with the clients in group, but we've had so many clients say, I thought I understood gaslighting, or I thought I understood boundaries until I did the individual sessions with her, and I was blown away. I learned so much. I was able to apply it. And by the end of, you know, six sessions with her or eight sessions with her, I am light years ahead of where I was before, just reading a book or watching a video or, you know, thinking about boundaries, because she has so many tools and the expertise that women need to tackle their specific situation within their own value system.
And that is so true. I mean, you were right when you said you know, working on videos and things like that can be helpful, but truly each individual partner's story and situation is different. And so Sarah would help you customize what you need based on your family, based on your own self-care, and based on what you want for the future. Because I run into this all the time in individual therapy. I have women that do have boundaries, but they don't have consequences. And if there isn't a consequence set up with the boundary, sometimes they say the same thing over and over and over again and expect different results. And so somebody like Sarah can help you just kind of plan it out. And again, that's by going to btr.org. So now let me just ask you, because you said it so fast, this Darvo method, I'm sure that our listeners are going to want to look this up, because it is for, it's a method abusive people take to keep you contained. So D stands for?
Deny.
Deny.
So
A,
mm-hmm. A stands
A
for
is?
Attack. Attack.
Uh-huh.
R stands for reverse. And then the V and the O stand for victim and offender. So it stands for reverse the victim and offender role. You see this very frequently. I'll bring up Bill Cosby, for example. So mm-hmm. he denies, then he attacks his accusers, saying they're crazy, they're not telling the truth. And then he reverses the victim and offender role by saying, I'm the victim here. They're accusing me unfairly. My reputation's being ruined. I'm the victim. And we see it frequently in the news when someone is accused of sexual abuse or sexual harassment, especially now during the Me Too movement. Many people who are being accused use this Darvo method. Now, they don't use it on purpose. It's not like there's some, you know, class for abusers of like how to get away with abuse, right? And that they learn this method in there and then they practice it. But this is a universal human way of avoiding accountability. And it has just been organized like this so that victims can see it. But I think it's really interesting that abusers use this tactic almost universally when they don't go to abuser school, right? I'm like, oh, wow. So we know that one element of an abuser is denial. We know that they refuse to tell the truth and they refuse to take accountability. Number two, we know that a characteristic of an abuser is to attack their victim. This also happens with porn use. If a woman says, I really feel uncomfortable with your porn use, I would really appreciate it if you would stop. And they'll say something like, well, if I found you attractive, maybe I could stop, right? They attack them like, you're not attractive, and so I have to use porn, or some other way of attacking their victim. And then reversing the victim and offender role. So saying, you know, well, I'm actually the victim here. I can't have sex with you because you're doing this to me, because you won't, you know, lose weight, or because you're always complaining, or because you don't respect me, or some other thing like that, that a porn user might use to avoid sex with his partner. So Darvo is a universal pattern that abusers use, and we see it frequently with porn users. And so we can say, oh, they're using the same tactics abusers use. Thus, they too are abusers. I think that's really interesting. Unlike victims, we're all different. Our personalities are all different. We all deal with it in different ways. Some victims just shout it to the world and tell everyone about what happened with their husband. Some don't tell a word to anyone ever. So victims are very different in many different ways. But abusers, they're different too, but they often follow these same patterns of deny, attack, and reverse the victim of an offender role.
Well, I know that I like the fact that you're telling our listening audience about this technique, and you're saying it's not like they purposefully do that. But when you have addiction, when you have pornography use, when you are participating in something that isn't right, you go to all extremes to keep the other person from calling you out, from confronting you. And so obviously, these techniques are used to get her off the track. And let's face it, what I believe to be true is that most of the addicts that I work with want very badly to do the next right thing. They really do. They are in it to win it. They are in it to want to build that relationship. And at the same time, they revert back to old behaviors because they've done it so long that it's ingrained. And the partner has to help stop the Darbo. You know, she can't fall into it. So now I want to ask you, why do you think that abuse associated with porn use is so accepted in today's society?
I've been thinking about this a lot. I think that pornography is so prevalent that I hear a lot of people say, well, not all porn users are abusers, right? And the argument that I say is, well, not all smokers get lung cancer, right? But we absolutely know that lung cancer is correlated with smoking. And similarly, maybe not every single porn user lies, denies, attacks, switches the victim and offender role, right? Maybe we have some porn users out there who are 100% honest about their porn use and their masturbation, and they are kind and they are loving to their spouse and they have really solid relationships. Although I've never heard of one, but we could have that, right? Somewhere that might be, but we know the reverse. All of the women that right. I've talked with that have been in abusive relationships, porn has been a factor, or an affair has been a factor, or some type of sexual infidelity has been a factor. I think that so many people use porn that people are just really terrified to say it's bad, right? They're just really afraid to take a really hard stand. Now, when we look at the Me Too movement, we see that some of the behaviors that were atrocious, right, that absolutely no one should have accepted. Women went in and told their HR director, or they told their friend, and someone said to them, that's just him, you know, just don't worry about it. And so it makes it difficult to navigate within a society where when you go tell someone, hey, this weird thing happened, and they don't say, oh, that's awful. They say, you know, don't worry about it. Guys use porn all the time or whatever. You might get that reaction. You're going to get that reaction from a lot of people. In fact, even in my own situation, I remember telling my mom and my sister, who love me dearly, they want the best for me. They want safety. I told them, like, my husband just screamed and yelled at me and told me that he doesn't love me and that I'm hideous to him. Okay. Which is an extremely abusive situation. And they said, oh man, he must have just been having a really bad day, right? They couldn't wrap their heads around that I was experiencing abuse because they knew him and they knew our family. And so the people who knew Harvey Weinstein, or I'm not sure how you say his name, Harvey Weinstein, or the people who know the abuser, they think, no, it can't be that bad. Or maybe the victim is exaggerating. So I think we, as a society, we all have this sort of collective denial and this collective excuses for why these things happen and collective explanations of the person was stressed or, oh, it's not that bad or whatever. And we haven't, as a society, really accepted what's happening and then been willing to take these people, to make these people accountable. So finally in the Me Too movement, people are being held accountable and people are saying, okay, this has got to stop. And we're also seeing women do that within their own homes. They're creating accountability, saying, okay, if this is the way that you're going to act, I'm setting this boundary and this is what I'm going to do. And getting the support that they need to be able to do that. Because when you start taking those stands, you're also going to have a group of people around you who either don't believe you or who don't want to accept that that's what's happening. And so you need a big team in your corner when you start stepping out into what I call the actual reality of our society, so that they can support you in this effort, because like I said, society in general is just not there yet where they're able to support victims of abuse.
Yeah. You know, Anne, I have been taught to be porn neutral, and I am not to pathologize people who use porn. But at the beginning of the show, I said, I will not judge anybody for using porn, but I will certainly help couples and partners who find that porn is a problem in their life. I'll help them cope with things. And I got to tell you, I do think all porn is bad, and I do think it objectifies women, and I do think that it really sets the stage for relationships to have difficulties, even if they don't go as far as abuse or addiction. And so I've made it my own to say, you know what, I get that I'm supposed to be porn neutral, but I can't possibly do the work I do and say that porn is okay. I just can't. It objectifies women. And that is never a healthy thing to do when you're in a committed relationship or when you want to be in a committed relationship, even for the single guys out there. You know, they're not going to be good partners to our women if they're objectifying. So I just had to say that, because, boy, it's a slippery slope. And again, different organizations that I work for would be angry with me for saying that. So,
I think it's interesting.
Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I am all about standing up for human rights, and porn doesn't fit into that.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it's so interesting that people won't buy blood diamonds, for example, or they won't buy coffee that's not, economically or sourced the right way. But we're talking about consumption of humans and human exploitation. So both in terms of abuse in a relationship where the wife of the porn user is being abused, but then you also have the actual woman or people in the pornography who are being abused through the production of that pornography. I talked with a former porn producer who said, I knew that I was ruining the lives of the women who I was filming. I knew they were on drugs. They were miserable. Their lives were being absolutely, completely destroyed. But I never thought about the viewer's life and how him viewing this was harming him and his family. And I think that's really interesting. So many people don't realize that when they watch pornography, they are viewing abuse, and they are being sexually turned on by someone being abused. And the whole system is exploitative in nature and abusive in nature. And when you participate in pornography, you are basically supplying the demand for sexual exploitation, which is really important to talk about when we are talking about pornography use.
You're taking it a whole nother dimension, because I agree with you there. It's exploitation at its worst. I want to remind our listening audience that I am talking to Anne Blythe, and she is the CEO and founder of BTR.org. And it's a wonderful organization that helps women dealing with abusive nature of porn and sexual addiction. And they utilize APSAT certified and trained coaches. And she has made it her mission to provide resources out there for you. And so go to that website, BTR.org. And if you haven't signed up for the podcast, do that. You know, she's always got interesting guests. I loved Gary Wilson's Your Brain on Porn. And you keep it so fresh and real that I just want to thank you for your purpose and passion in this movement. You are making incredible changes in this world.
Thank you so much, Coach Carol.
All right. Well, you have a good week, and keep me posted on other things that the staff is doing, because we'd love to have you back on the show.
Will do. Have a good week, too.
Okay. So my listening audience, I do want you to go to btr.org because I'm not kidding you. They are a whole host of information. And you feel alone and you feel like you can't do this by yourself. You're not alone. And we're here for you. And that's what this show's about. That's what her show's about. For incredible coaches, APSATs, I mean. Again, this movement started with our president that spoke last week on APSATs because she got it started when she, too, became a partner of sexual addiction. And she knew that she had to create her own sense of safety, and so she went back to school. She wrote My Sexually Addicted Spouse with Marsha Means, put together this organization, and has been training clinicians and coaches to have a partner-sensitive approach. And we can't thank her enough, too. All right, so thank you for listening. Can't wait to see you, well, to talk to you next week. And as I say at the end of every show, there will only be one of you at all times, so I fearlessly want you to have the courage to be yourself, but don't do it alone. Find healthy people and safe resources to navigate this journey with you. Have a great week.